Attention fellow musicians, we can try and figure out music as much as we can by ear, but sometimes you need a little help, and that's where Ultimate Guitar comes in. Whether you're a professional musician or a beginner, Ultimate Guitar is an amazing app for you. For just $2.99, you get the chords and tabs on guitar, bass, and ukulele for over a million songs. You also get tools like a tuner, a metronome, chord library, lessons, and videos. Just go to ultimateguitar.com or download the app to your phone and start jamming today. That's Ultimate Guitar. Let's get down.
And you may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a great weekend, whatever it is you did. I had an eventful weekend, my friends. I played with Skyrocket Friday night for the Long Center Gala over there here at the Long Center here in Austin, just down the street from my place. It was a great show. It was a good time. It was good hanging out with all the guys. We had a lot to talk about backstage, and we had a lot of time to sit around and talk about it between soundcheck and the show, and it was a good time, all right? Saturday, I went to see the band Metric at the Moody Theater with my friend Kathy Valentine. She took me to go see Metric. I love that band, and she loves that band, and we went and checked them out. It was a great show. We had a great time catching up. Got to see her new place. Great new place. Sunday, I played a show at Cosmic Coffee, Johnny Gowdy and Friends. I played with a band that included A&R Peterson on bass, Eric Garcia on drums, Gabriel Rhodes on guitar, and Sarah Dossey from Dossey, and Mary Claire Glazer from Shy Beast singing backup. And then I also had a lot of friends come up and do songs with me. I did basically like an hour by myself having special guests come up, and then I did an hour with the band. Two-hour show straight. I had great guests like Mark Hallman, my mentor, Kimmy Rhodes, one of my great dear friends, Gabriel Rhodes. Jeremy Nail, Kate Priestley. A lot of people came up. AJ Vallejo and Kathy Valentine both came up with the band and sat in. It was great. It was a fun time for everyone involved. And it reminded me what a great community I live in. You know, here's all these generations on stage. You know, Mark Hallman's making records in the 70s and 80s. Kimmy Rhodes is started out making records in the 70s and 80s. And here are Sarah and MC from Shy Beast and Dossey doing music now. Everyone's up there sharing their music and meeting each other. Kathy Valentine, everyone's, I don't know. It just reminded me that I'm glad to be a part of this community. So I want to thank all the guests that came out and played. I want to thank Paula Vasey for having such a great place. Get out to Cosmic Coffee. Great bar, great coffee, great food, great shows on the weekends. And with great sound. Josh Kleiman is the sound guy there, and he brings in his system, and it's an amazing sound system, and he turns the place into a rockin' concert venue in like 30 minutes. Unbelievable. Anyway, great weekend. I spent the day Sunday doing nothing, just kind of laying around. I did see that Michael Jackson documentary. Guys, I don't even know what to think. I mean, my mind was blown. My head exploded. Like, you know, you think you know this stuff, you know? I didn't see the Oprah conversation afterwards because really watching that whole thing is a lot. I mean, it's a lot. It's like 4 hours long, and it's just nothing but depressing and just the shattering of someone that you looked up to your whole life, you know? And not that I didn't think that this stuff happened before, and, it's awful. It's awful. If you don't want to get bummed out, don't watch the documentary. Anyway, guys, that was my weekend. Hope you guys had a great weekend. I have a great show for you guys today. I have guitarist, composer, and producer Beto Martinez from the band Grupo Fantasma, Money Chicha, and Brownout. He also has the recording studio Leche House Music. You can find them at Leche House Music on Facebook. Grupo Fantasma is dropping a brand new album this month, American Music Volume 8. They're going to have a big show on Friday or on March 29th at the Mohawk. Okay, and Brownout is playing shows, and Money Chicha will be playing March 23rd at Continental Club here in Austin. So get out there and find those bands. If you're a fan of that Grupo Fantasma family of music, Beto Martinez is a big part of it. Not only is he a guy in all those bands playing guitar and writing songs with those guys, but he's also producing other bands like Superfónicos and other bands like that, bringing other Federico 7, bringing all these bands into this thing and bringing that Latin music. It's almost like Latin psych rock. And it has all the different things, the cumbias, the salsas, all the different styles of Latin music brought into this rock and roll world where it's just absolutely beautiful. I love all of these bands, and getting to sit down and talk to Beto was really eye-opening, and he's a really great guy. He's from Laredo. He moved here to Austin in 1996, so he's been here for about 23 years. He's seen some changes, I bet. Yeah. All right, so without further ado, I hope you guys have a great week. Whatever it is you do during the week, and enjoy my conversation with the incredibly talented and extremely cool Beto Martinez. Let's get down.
I've heard your work. It's all very good.
Awesome.
Yeah. So what was the name of that band you had in there this week that you were recording?
Huateques Son.
Huateques Son.
Yeah.
And they're from here? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They were really great.
Were you around for, because you moved here from Laredo in 96?
Yeah, that's right.
And were you around for that Son Yuma and Son y No Son and that whole sort of pre-grupo Latin movement?
Yeah, definitely, man. Yeah. That was all like new to me coming from Laredo, like these son bands and all this like Cuban inspired music, and
right.
Definitely, I was here for all that. Yeah.
Did you listen to that beforehand? How do you like, what did you grow up listening to in Laredo?
I mean, mainly like rock and metal. That was my thing. And sort of like the cumbia and Latin music, I was not that interested in at the time. I mean, because most of what you heard there was not the type of cumbia that we ended up gravitating towards, which was like Colombian cumbia. It was more like the Tejano style cumbia, what they call like norteño.
Right.
And really, it was like what your parents liked.
Right.
So I liked the opposite of that. You know what
right,
I mean?
Of course,
so we went towards the metal stuff.
Yeah. So did you come up as a shredder?
Somewhat. I don't think I was good enough at that point to be considered a shredder, but that was my aspiration.
Yeah. Who were your guys, your idols?
I mean, my first sort of guitar aspirations in that realm were Metallica. So like, you know, Kirk Hammett and then Slayer and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Kirk's really good.
Yeah, he is, man. He kind of gets some flack, I guess, because he's also kind of bluesy. He's not so much of the, like, I mean, he does the tapping and stuff, but I think
I hear that blues stuff thrown around with it, but when you come up here musically, you're like, the guy's not bluesy.
No, that's what they say, but I have no problem with him. I think he's great.
Okay so here's a question that I have for all of the members of your bands that have been in on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Is just like, does the band dictate where you put your energy at the time? Because there's three main, there's Grupo, which is sort of the mothership,
if you will.
The flagship group. And then there's Brownout. And then offshoots of that are Brown Sabbath. And then there's Money Chicha.
Yeah.
So do you guys, I notice you guys in the next few months, you're all playing at least one show. What like when it's time to make a Money Chicha record, when it's time to make a Brownout record, when it's time to make a Grupo record, what dictates
how that occurs?
Where you put your energy?
Well, you know, for a long time, we were completely focused on Grupo Fantasma. And long time, I say like a decade.
Yeah.
And it was only when we had spare time and we weren't on tour that we'd devote time to Brownout, which is why Brownout existed for 5 or 6 years before we ever put a record out.
Right.
Money Sheet Shop was kind of in the same situation, but we were focusing on Brownout. It was like when Grupo started to slow down around 2013, we kind of turned our sights towards Brownout, especially Brown Sabbath at that point. And Money Sheet Shop kind of was another 5 years before we put a record out.
Right.
So it kind of depends, I guess, on what's hot, if you will, like what's going on. But these days, that like singular focus isn't there as much. We're a lot more scattered, and it seems like that's kind of out of necessity, like just to keep busy and keep working. We're focusing on kind of everything at once and wherever we can, just recording and trying to put music out. And it's become a little bit less important, I think, to put out the magnum opus, like. And we've been doing like 45s and stuff like that, you know, singles and EPs. We still love making records, but I think with that sort of more kind of scattered model of just kind of trying to focus on everything at once, that sort of lends itself to putting out singles and putting out EPs and just kind of trying to keep it rolling all at once.
Yeah. And you guys have a new Grupo record coming out in March.
That's right. We do March 29th.
Yeah. And you're playing here and you got a couple shows in like Arizona or something, but is there like a tour? Is there going to be a tour for that?
Yeah, there is. So this is also sort of like kind of the evolution of things at this point. Whereas we used to kind of go out for months and months, now we kind of do these smaller runs. So, you know, we have something going out Southwest in April, doing some East Coast dates more towards May. But these are like short runs. And then we have this kind of, this really big thing that we're doing, excuse me, this really big thing that we're doing, which is we're going to Russia and Turkey.
Oh, no shit. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's going to happen in June. And then we're going to kind of sneak out of there and go into Europe for a couple weeks. And that's actually surprisingly going to be like a 5-week tour, which we haven't done in a little bit, but
be exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Never been out there. So
Adrian's not in Grupo anymore.
No, he's not.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I like? I liked watching you guys in Money Chicha. I like two guitar players that speak to each other on stage.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Like definitely. That really make a point to it. And I always think about this one group because for some reason it really I see it very clearly with them, even though they're kind of goofy and an odd reference. But like when Steve Clark was still alive.
Yeah.
And him and Phil Collin in Def Leppard.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that was the most awesome two guys. You could put in like a technical guy and then a guy that like played his shit so low he could barely make it to a thing and was wasted. It was like it was just. That communication was so beautiful, and I find that to be one of the great things I love so much about Money Chicha. Is he still playing with Money Chicha? And,
well, he's actually gone. Not playing with Money Chicha anymore. Yeah, he got really so busy a couple years ago, and
well, he's also in 45 different bands too. Like, and every year he has some new amazing band. He comes like Echocentrics, and what was the one Out in the Street that had the song Out in the Street? That song was great.
With Spanish Gold.
Spanish Gold, yeah. And now Black Pumas.
Yeah, he's definitely busy. He's got his hands in a lot of stuff.
I've
always loved that relationship also between guitarists, and that's how, you know, Fantasma was a two guitar action for 13 years, and we kind of prided ourselves on that. And before that, my band before that was also a two guitar situation. So when Adrian split, it was sort of like we talked about getting another guitar player, but I decided to just that we weren't going to do that. That I'd just take it by myself, and it was kind of like relearning a lot of stuff, or not relearning, but just
you had to redefine what your role was.
Exactly.
Because all of a sudden it doubled, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And with Money Sheet, that sort of music has a history of this dual guitar, dual harmonized guitar lines and stuff like that. We have a keyboard player now, so we work off of each other.
Okay,
like that.
Cool.
Yeah. But yeah, it was kind of a shame when he split. So
yeah, yeah. But everyone's cool. He's just busy because you guys are like a family.
Exactly.
And it spreads too, because like Superfónicos now to me is like that next generation of the Grupo family, like the new guys.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's not like they're a whole generation younger, but, you know, you guys came out a good 15 years ago, right?
19 years ago.
Jesus Christ. Are you guys going to have a 20th anniversary celebration of some sort?
Yeah, I think that's the idea. We're sort of throwing around a couple different things. We have a friend of ours, Aaron Brown, who runs Onion Creek Productions. They do, like, video stuff, and he's done music videos for us over the years, but he has a ton of footage from the earliest days, like from my first tour in 01, and had a chat with him a few months back about trying to compile some stuff. So I don't know. We'll see.
Is there, like, when you did your Prince thing, was that before everyone's phone had a camera?
Yes, because
God,
I remember
that sucks.
Going to buy a camera and trying to buy the smallest one I could. So the thing with that was that we weren't allowed to take pictures,
I knew that.
We would sneak some, like, where we could, never with him.
Right.
But just kind of the scene, you know. But I actually went and bought a small digital camera that I tried to conceal in my pocket. But, yeah, there are no photos except press photos of us with him on stage. So
tell me about that experience with him. I've gotten it from a couple of you guys. I'd like to get in a third perspective. So Grupo Fantasma, basically Prince asked you guys to back him up for some stuff, right?
Yeah, so it started with they were looking for a Latin band at his club on Thanksgiving 06, because that Thursday night was a Latin night, and the band that was playing couldn't do it. So we submitted some music. They told us that he liked it and for us to come out and do the show, so we did it. It was super dead. It was Thanksgiving night in Vegas. I don't know who was going out to a Latin show. but after flying home, we didn't meet him or anything like that. We flew home and got the message that he loved it and wanted us to be the house band for every Thursday. So we started flying out there every Thursday.
And doing this show. That is so cool.
And that's kind of how it started. We did about three of those before on one of them that we came back home on Friday, did some shows. And Sunday afternoon, I always remember this because we had like a big homecoming show or something on Saturday night. So it was a really late night. So Sunday at about noon, I'm kind of like just getting out of bed and stuff and just hanging out. And the phone rings and it's our manager. And he's like, how fast can you be at the airport? And you're like, why, what's up? And he's like, Prince wants you guys in LA for a party. It was like, what? So it's like, well, I could be there in an hour. Okay. So we all meet up there and it sort of, that started off this adventure. We ended up playing this private party at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in the penthouse. That was like super exclusive. He had won a Golden Globe that day. And he threw this mega A-list private party. I mean, there was a helicopter like hovering outside trying to catch a glimpse. And we were just set up like in the living room of this penthouse, you know, and suddenly every A-list movie star you could think of and musicians were all there and they were getting down. And like I said, it was private. So everybody was comfortable and relaxing and dancing and, looking back on it, I think it was like a test. He kind of put us in this situation.
See if you could hang.
Yeah, like we could have freaked out. We could have done something stupid or I don't know, but we rocked it instead. Yeah. You know, we rocked the party.
Hey, real quick, I want you to continue with the story, but there's a logistical snafu that's happening in my head right now. When you get a call and they're like, hey, they're doing this party, how did you, they got you the backline? It's Prince. They got you the backline that fast.
Yes. Which was never a problem with him. He had...
I love that.
Yeah, he had people around him, production, just ready to go. And often, like, his crew was definitely, I think, overworked because he would have these whims. He would just, like, after a performance, like, after a show at an arena, he'd be like, let's do an after party. And people would start making stuff happen. They'd start loading up gear and start moving stuff around. And then it wouldn't happen. Then he'd maybe change his mind or whatever. So it was always ready to go.
What an interesting sort of like life, but what a great talent. So what was it mm-hmm. like? Like, did you ever get to talk to him at all? Like, did he ever, like, hey, Beto, how's it going? Did he even know your name? What's going on?
I don't know if he knew my name.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Honestly, or any of us, since, you know, we're a bunch of guys. I actually remember one time him walking into rehearsal, and he shook one guy's hand, and everybody, like, put their hands out. And he shook, like, three hands, and he was like, hey, guys, sorry, I'm not going to shake everybody's hand. Yeah. But but there were.
I want that freedom in life, don't you? Don't you want to be,
yeah,
like,
just
hey,
be like, hey,
guys, I don't want to have to say hi. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
I did it last week.
Exactly.
Especially, I'm Cuban, so like being Latino, like hello and goodbye is like this fucking like extravaganza of time.
Yeah, handshakes kind of like... and hugs and kiss and yeah. like, yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah, okay, so sorry. So
there were, I think, a couple of like sort of personal moments, or as personal as they could get,
right?
That I had with him. Probably the most memorable was in London. He was doing 21 nights in London. He brought us out to do one night, so we opened the show.
Yeah,
and then we did after party at the smaller club. So the main show was at the O2 Arena.
Jesus,
20,000 people sold out.
Jesus, dude.
and then the after party was a smaller club that was in the same like building.
Yeah.
So after all of that, you know, which is probably about 6 hours of playing at that point. Him playing straight, we opened the show and then played another like 2 hours with him. And then he played 2 hours with his band. So it's like 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning. We're sitting backstage. And we thought he had left. Adrian and I had walked out to get a beer. We weren't supposed to drink backstage. Uh-huh. But this had been a crazy, insane night. Yeah. You know, we just like the first arena we ever played. So we thought he was gone. We went and got a beer. I'm walking backstage, and I go to put the coat into the green room. And the door opens, and it's him. So I put the beer behind my back. And then, of all times, is the time he chooses to want to have a chat.
Yeah.
And he's just like, hey, what did you think? And I'm like, that was amazing. Thank you so much for bringing us out. And he's like, oh, yeah, now you can come back to London anytime you want. Now they know you here. So I was like, all right.
God, that's cool.
And
that's
then
like
he
a
talks
line
about,
out of one of his movies.
Yeah. I mean, it gets better. He's like, so now the next thing y'all got to do is make some hits. And I'm like, well, you're the man that knows how to make hits. So what do we do? And he's like, oh, one hit is easy. Y'all can make 10. And I'm like freaking out in my head. I would like want to scream at that point and call everybody like, Brent said we can make 10 hits. but yeah, we just kind of chatted back and forth about the show, but it was memorable, to say the least.
What was it like playing with him?
Nerve-wracking?
Yeah, I could imagine.
Yeah, it was pretty nerve-wracking.
Did you, like, was there a thing where you felt like you were connected when you were playing?
Yes, because
are you trying to catch up?
I mean, maybe, like, the first couple times I was a little too nervous.
Yeah.
Because he loved to call you out. He loved to, like, break the band down and just point at you and be like, you do something.
Yeah.
Or like just throw out a lick and be like, play this. And it was always my
Jesus
fear that
Christ.
He was going to do something insane that I'd be like, wait a minute, could you show me that again?
Can we slow it down? Just do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
were you putting that first finger?
Yeah. So, yeah, it was a mix of fear and excitement and just awe of being there, you know? But there were also a few times, I mean, where we're just all locked. And, you know, talking about the two guitar thing, he was a huge fan of that. So there were multiple times where he would break it down to guitars. And we'd do like dual rhythm guitar, me and Adrian. And then Prince would be on top of it, just kind of throwing some little leads and stuff. And I mean, that was like heavenly, you know.
Does it blow your mind that you're able to say that? Yeah, me and Adrian were just holding it down, and then Prince was just doing his leads, like, wah!
Yeah, it's something
wow.
that I would have never imagined being a little kid freaking out to Purple Rain.
Yeah, that's insane. So, man, let's talk about some of this Let Your House Music on Facebook. That's the name of your studio, Let Your House. People can find it on Facebook. When did you start recording? When did that... did you grow up in the four-track era?
Yes, but I actually never had a four-track. So my drummer, when we started out, had one. And it's funny because I wasn't that interested at that time. And even like the first couple Grupo records, I was kind of on the sidelines.
Who produced those?
They were, I guess, essentially produced by the band. Adrian was already sort of showing aptitude for that and kind of stepping in and leading some of that. And then a couple of the other guys. But it actually took me a little while. It probably wasn't until like 06 when I got a laptop and started using GarageBand. And I started wanting to record my own stuff. And that's how it started.
How did you start record? Like, did you not have mics or anything? Were you kind of putting stuff together in the box? And
yeah, exactly. I had like a little interface that I could connect to. Sure. And just put down guitar parts. And, you know, before that, I used to write the parts because Adrian actually was my neighbor for 8 years. He lived on the next street over. He still lives there. We sold our house. I'd come up with stuff on the guitar and just have it all in my mind. And then I'd run over to his house and lay it down on his computer.
Yeah.
But when I finally got mine, it was just a little interface and just kind of putting ideas down to drum loops.
How does when a band produces a record like Grupo, what was that like? Was that chaos or are you guys really, because you all seem, I mean, I only know you guys from the outside, right? Yeah. You don't know marriage till you're one of the people in the thing. But it seems like you guys are all very cool, but you're also a bunch of Latin dudes.
Yeah.
So I could see stuff going off the rails if it had to.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's never been too bad. We've always sort of had a core group within the group that's been like the songwriters and the guys that kind of have the most interest in the production.
Okay.
And then there's a few guys that you know, they just come in and play and they're fine with whatever. They're like, yeah, you guys take care of it.
Right.
So that helps. But then you get, you know, three or four guys that have strong opinions. And there's been times in our career where we were like fully on the same page. And I think we just knock stuff out. Maybe that's been some of our best work. I don't know. But then there's been times where we're like, just had kind of different or competing ideas, you know? I think the first two records with Fantasma that kind of, we felt like we captured a sound that we wanted to capture, were Sonidos Gold and Existential. And Sonidos Gold, we did with Stuart Sullivan over at Wire Recording.
Yeah.
And we didn't have a producer per se at that point. Adrian, like I said, who had already been sort of taking a little bit of that lead role, was kind of default there up front. And then myself, my bass player, Greg, were also there. And then Stuart played a huge role in that record, just kind of not credited as a producer, but we were still learning, and he's obviously a seasoned pro. So
he's a lot of fun to work with. I bet you learned a lot working with him.
We did learn a lot working with him. So he really helped on that one. On the next one, Adrian kind of asked the band, can I produce this one?
Right.
And we said, yeah, you know. So he became the producer tiebreaker guy between the rest of us, and we sort of developed a workflow around that. And then after that, the next two records, we actually hired outside producers with the express goal of like, hey, guys, let's put it in his hands. I know how much you're going to want to like push your agenda, but let's see what this guy wants to do. You know?
Yeah. So. Plus, it's good that, you know, there's those things. I believe in it. Like for myself as an artist, I find that like there are times when I need to have just me in here doing everything. Because I can do that. I came up learning how to do that and kind of expressing myself in that way. But then there are a lot of times when I need someone to be like, hey, man, you know, this doesn't need four guitar things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, definitely.
Why don't you try and work on the song a little harder rather than making the drums sound rad so the song will get better? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you do. And I like that balance of it. Do you even like now as a studio owner and producer yourself, do you still like to have someone come in and be like, hey,
yes, I actually had an experience, well, with this last Brownout record that we just did, which is not out yet. I actually recorded it. We brought Steve Berlin in to produce.
Oh yeah.
So it was my first time as an engineer with a producer like that in my studio. And I think I realized that I don't want to do it that way again. Not the idea of having a producer, but trying to engineer it and record on it,
yeah,
with a producer there,
yeah,
which was super, like, it was just like overly consuming of like every aspect of my mind,
yeah.
But yes, I feel like breaking up those roles, like either musician, engineer, or producer, maybe two of those here and there, but not all three of them, you know?
Right. Yeah, that's a lot. What do you feel like you learned from Steve Berlin? Anything you can pick out?
Man, I think just not being afraid to try stuff and just messing with like tones and stuff. That Steve's really good at that. And then like basically changing up what you're used to. You're like, this is the guitar sound I always have. And he's like, why don't we try this? And he'll totally change it and freaks you out at first. You're like, that's not usually how I do it. But I guess that's why we brought you in, so let's go for it, and it works.
Yeah.
He was also really good at just, like, as far as, like, songwriting, just real simple little tweaks, like changing accents.
Yeah.
Just changing one chord, you know what I mean? That mm-hmm. that just opens stuff up that you'd have never thought of.
Did you pick that up? You know what I mean? Like, I feel like as a producer, I'm an amalgam of all the things I thought were the best of everyone I've worked with up until now. You know what I mean? I'm going to have the vibe of this guy, the kick drum sound of that guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the ability to stop people from fighting for this guy, you know?
Exactly. No, yeah. I think I've picked up a lot. There were definitely some things. We had just done that record with Steve when we went out to Sonic Ranch last January for the Fantasma record. Uh-huh. And we had a different producer there. Who we didn't even know that well. His name was Carlos Bedoya. He goes by Loco. All
right.
Yeah, he's a Colombian dude based in Miami. Has done a ton of major stuff like in the pop and hip-hop world.
Yeah.
And I met him actually through the Superfónicos guys.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Awesome.
but yeah, we took some of the Steve Berlin lessons there, and while we were kind of crafting some of the songs there, and we're like, remember how Steve did this one thing where we just changed up
this
accent?
That's always great, man.
Let's try that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it works. The
record that you're talking about is American Music Volume 8?
Seven. Yeah, Volume 7.
God, why can't I do... I can do Roman numerals. I just wasn't wearing my glasses.
That's cool.
I wish I edited this show. I would make myself seem so much smarter. So you like working at Sonic Ranch. Is Tony still out there?
Tony is out there, that's man.
Yeah, he's out there.
Well, yeah, I guess that's not how I meant that, but yeah.
No. I mean that in the best way possible. I love
that
guy.
Yeah.
I can't remember how many years ago I was walking with a bunch of friends of mine. We were at this party like early in the day at South by Southwest, like at 1 PM. I ran into Tony. He's like, no way. And like literally it was like 3 AM and I was like, man, I got to go, Tony. Because he's a great guy.
Yeah,
I've never worked out there. I've just gone out there and hung out.
And just hung out, yeah. I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, he's very welcoming that way, too. He appreciates... I think that place is amazing.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible resource. I mean, for us, I don't think we would have been able to make this Fantasma record if we hadn't done that in particular. Because like we were talking about earlier, but being so scattered and sort of everybody committed to so many things at this point... That was one of the main reasons that we went out there was like, okay, we're going to be out there. You can't leave. We're out in the middle of the desert. Like, yeah. And
there's nowhere to go.
Yeah, there's nowhere to go. You don't have any other commitments. There's food right there. There's espresso.
Yeah.
There's everything you need. Let's just concentrate on making this record. And it worked. We were super productive.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great place. Anyone that doesn't know what we're talking about, it's in Tornillo, Texas. Which is out a good hour or something outside of El Paso, right?
Yeah, something like 40, 50 miles.
Yeah, and it's on like a 2,500-acre pecan ranch or something?
Yeah, I don't know the exact size, but it's big. Yeah, it was his
giant hacienda with all these great rooms. Ladies make you breakfast.
Yeah, they got 5 studios out there now, man.
Jesus Christ, yeah. That's amazing. Where's Money Chicha at right now with music and stuff?
About to head out to Sonic Ranch.
Oh yeah, excellent. When is that?
Yeah, we're gonna be out there in April.
Okay.
Yeah, we just released a 45 through Breakaway Records here in town. That was a couple of covers. We did a Prince cover, we did Let's Go Crazy.
Oh really?
Yeah. And then we did Human Behavior, the Bjork song.
Oh, yeah.
With Kiko Viamisada singing.
Jesus, that's awesome.
Yeah, it came out super cool. It was his idea. He walked in a green room one day and was like, what do you guys think of Goom Bjork?
That's awesome.
We were like, that is awesome.
That is awesome. So you guys do, there's just a lot of great collaborations. Even the Brown Sabbath started off with different people, with Alex Moss and Marrero.
Yeah. So the initial idea of that show, which was part of a residency, it was going to be just one night only.
Yeah.
Was to have all of
you
all
guys
these
have
different
that
singers.
Thing like, yeah. Man, we, it seemed, I mean, yeah, but they just keep asking us to do it. It's like the mob.
Yeah, exactly. Once
sorry, you go think ahead. I didn't mean direct. Yeah.
Pull you back in. Yeah. No, it's super true. I mean, we didn't have any real expectations for it, but the initial idea was to have different singers for every song almost. And I'm sure Alex probably told this story.
Yeah.
Where he approached us and we were like, oh, maybe you could do one song. We have all these other singers.
Yeah.
And then almost everybody canceled the day of the show.
Yeah.
So then we're calling him like, hey, could you do like five songs?
Yeah. I got to say, like, it is an interesting, you did hit some kind of nail on the head with that combo of music. Like that band's songs with that style of music is awesome.
Well, like, thank you.
It is fucking awesome.
Yeah, it seems like, it struck a nerve. I mean, I think that the name also was just tailor-made, the Brown Sabbath, which was just a funny thing for us.
Everything was perfect, yeah.
But even before we had worked out any of the songs, John Spies, the drummer, made an ad for it with, like, this kitten with an upside-down cross on its forehead.
That's awesome.
It said Brown Sabbath.
Yeah.
And people just freaked out just with that, like, oh, my God, is this real?
Yeah. It's interesting because you can't, when you set out to do something like to have a viral, like start a buzz.
Yeah.
Then
it doesn't happen yet.
It doesn't. It's so forced and weird. It has to happen naturally. And when you don't expect it.
Exactly.
Is there anything, do you guys have anything going for this year at all?
For Brown Sabbath?
Yeah.
We have a couple of shows right now that are booked, not in Texas.
Right. But there's shows. I mean, those shows are good for you guys in a way because I'm glad that you get to play. I'm sorry I don't get to see these shows, but I bet that they're good for you guys, like financial health.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a market out there for this stuff, man. There's so many bands right now doing these tributes, you know, and I mean.
I'm in a cover band and I mean, that's what pays for all this magic.
Yes, there's a market for it, and people pay to go see it, for you know whatever that's worth. But yeah, definitely helps get Brownout out on the road, like Brownout proper.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, how do you guys like? Because you added Alex, and now he's in the band.
Yeah,
in Brownout as well, and that's working out great.
Yeah, so far.
Yeah.
no, I mean that in the best way, but because Alex is awesome, man. He's brought a whole different aspect to it. You know, Brownout never had a lead singer per se. We used to do what we call brocals,
right?
Which was just like terrible kind of group chants, because we're all limited vocalists. So this new record is kind of going to be the big reveal. He's been doing live shows with us, and we've worked in more vocal songs, but this record is like the feature for him because we wrote songs with him,
right?
That feature lead.
So when
lead
is
vocals.
That coming out?
There's not a specific date yet, but we're shooting for fall.
Yeah,
we kind of just got the masters, and now we're going to start talking to labels and stuff.
Okay, I want to ask you about that because you guys. Have a lot of different deals. Every band's on a different label, right?
Yeah.
How does that work? Do those guys ever get mad at you and like, hey man, you know, come back to this band, we're not done, you know?
Or
they come in with an understanding of who you guys are?
Yeah, I think so. We haven't had any issues like that. I mean, I think maybe there's probably some like, hey, I wish they would kind of promote this a little more or something. But we really try our best. Like the last Fantasma record in 2015, we did hit the road and we did some stuff. We weren't out there like we used to be.
Right.
And it wasn't entirely because we didn't want to be. It's just sort of the forces that be that are that are in play out there. You know what I mean? We ended up doing more Brownout than we did Fantasma. But we've been lucky to have really cool and understanding label partners that have been very supportive.
It's also like in like if there was premeditated business thought, because there isn't, right? It's not like you guys were like, hey man, we'll do these three bands, and then like when one's not working very much, we'll have this other one to do stuff. Yeah. But it's the smartest thing. You have, you didn't put all your eggs in one basket where like you gotta go wash dishes at Alamo Draft House when Grupo's not doing work. You got fucking other bands that are doing other stuff that are happening.
Yeah, we've been pretty fortunate, man. We like I was saying earlier, we were like very single-minded for a lot of years, or singularly focused with Fantasma.
Yeah.
For probably 12, 13 years.
That's a long time. It's longer than the Beatles.
Yeah. It is. No, it is true. So like we were fortunate that was super busy for a long time. When it started to slow down, is right when Brown Sabbath happened. So it kind of, we just stepped over from one to the other. But that's kind of been our MO all along. It's been like, what are we going to do now? Let's make another band. So we just kind of run with it. And it's gotten to this point now where, we can sort of, one just hands off to the other, or we fill in gaps where we can. And I mean, like you said, it's much more appealing than trying to go out and find some other
job. Then also you're not just beating your head against, you know what I mean? How you can burn out on something. You have like,
that's very true,
places you can put your energy where every time you go to it, it's fresh.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
That's pretty cool. Tell me a little bit about Leche House.
So Leche House is my studio in Buda.
Yeah.
It's a little building that's off of my actual house. Mm-hmm. And I moved out there in 2013 and had this little building there. It took me probably a year before I actually started spending, like, we sold our house in Austin, moved out to Buda, and I had a little chunk of change that I was holding on with the idea to make a studio. And I sat in that little building with just my laptop and a desk for almost a year, just kind of scared to spend money. And then I finally, like, my wife was like, are you going to use this, or we make it an apartment or what? And I was like, all right, let me make the move. You know, there's always like some hesitancy when you kind of jump into something new like
there's that. It's always nice though to have the apartment for just in case the shit goes down, you got half of your thing covered.
Exactly.
But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because it's big enough for that. So finally just started kind of buying gear. And Greg Gonzalez, my bass player, initially brought over a bunch of stuff too. He like brought a Rhodes out, and my neighbor gave me a drum kit, and like all this sort of stuff kind of came
cool,
together.
Man. Yeah.
But that's how it started, and started getting some of the like local Latin bands, you know, people that were familiar with what I've done that wanted to work out there. And
that's a great place, a starting place. Like, I think if I didn't have some kind of musical, you know what I mean? I wouldn't, if you were just a guy starting a studio, it seems like it would be nuts, but you have a band that people like and they want to work with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. If you have something that people are familiar with,
it
definitely helps. And that's where it started there. You know what I mean? It was these bands that were familiar with my work. And I'm happy that they gave me that opportunity, because it was also like a little learning curve. You know, I started out slowly and like started getting gear together, but then like recording full bands was kind of new.
Yeah.
But I think I've gotten into a good place now, and it's fairly steady work, especially when I'm home, you know, when I'm not on the road. And that was the goal initially, was just kind of like fill in some of the gaps where all these bands didn't fill in.
Yeah.
And I think I've gotten into a decent place at this point.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. And the work you did with Superphonicos is great. I just worked with them in the artist development program at Austin Music Foundation. Was around for a lot of that. Suelta!
Yeah.
Release.
That's awesome, man. Thank you.
Yeah, it's a great record. Great band. You know, there's a thing about, like you were saying stuff about tribute bands. There's people that go to that. To me, there's also like this element of like music that you can dance to and is celebratory music, like funk.
Yeah.
Or Latin music. You know, salsa, cumbia, stuff like that. To me, it seems like it's easier to, if you do it well, you can get a crowd quickly because it's a party.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's go to this party. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. I mean,
is that what you feel like that music is?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because it's about good times for the most part. And I mean, I think that was the initial appeal of Fantasma. Like, you had asked me earlier about if I was around for, like, the Son Yuma and...
Sony no Son.
Yeah, Sony no Son and that sort of era of Latin music in Austin. Mm-hmm. Those bands were all super awesome. They were really great. I mean, incredible musicians. And they had a lot of people going out to dance to those things. But I feel just sort of in comparison to Fantasma and how we started, there was a formality to that music and to what they were doing where people really dressed up. People went out and danced well, and they knew exactly what they were doing.
Yeah.
Fantasma came out as this sort of like ragtag bunch of like 20-year-olds that had been playing rock and funk.
Right.
And then suddenly we're playing these cumbias super loud and
kind fuzz of pedals.
Fuzz pedals and the whole thing. And
yeah. Wah-wah pedals.
Like really sloppy at the time too. So, but this whole other crowd gravitated towards it where you could just go super crowded, get sweaty.
Yeah.
You didn't have to dress nice. You didn't have to know how to dance.
Yeah. 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 That's a big thing.
So I think that was a big appeal. It was just a big old party for everyone.
Huh. That's another thing that you can't go back and try and engineer that.
No.
With another band. Oh, listen, it worked with Grupo. Let's do this. You know what I mean? It's pretty awesome when the stars align and do stuff. And the great thing is that you're all so good. I've had Greg on the show. Mm. I think like a year or so ago. He's a really talented guy. What's his, doesn't he have a school?
Yeah, so he works at the Conservatory of Music.
Yes.
But he has his own spot at Mosaic.
Oh, he does?
Sound Collective now. Okay. Yeah, he's got a room there where he's got his little studio set up, and he's teaching mostly like Ableton and MIDI stuff.
I should go take a class there.
Yeah, man. He's definitely got it going with that.
How do you like that Mosaic?
I think it's super cool. Yeah. I love the idea. There's a ton of potential there. I know they're still kind of working it up and getting people in there, but
it seemed like I went there one day and it was empty, and then I went there to be on a session that Stuart was doing there on my friend Gabe Rhodes' album.
Yeah.
And then I went out there for like a party, and it was like the place was like pretty full. I mean, it's so huge. It's like when Dan takes you on the tour, you're like, wait, are we still in Austin? Like, where are we?
Yeah, man. Yeah. You go through all these doorways and hallways sprawling, and you don't even know where you are. That actually, I went over to Greg's spot yesterday to pick up some files and I got lost. Had to go back to the front and ask Dan. I was like, where's Greg's room?
So do you have there been any great pieces of outboard gear or anything that you've picked up along the way? Any sort of things where you're like, oh, guess what we got?
Well, my sort of centerpiece to my studio, which I was super happy to score early on because the prices for them have skyrocketed, is a Tascam 388.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you're...
Are you kidding me? I owned one. I did a record one. Just had a guy on here that did... You know Ty Richards?
No, I don't.
He just did his record on a Tascam 388.
Oh, yeah?
Sorry. My favorite recording machine.
Yes, it is super awesome. I initially got it thinking like, I'll use it for certain things or sort of start off here and get a board. And I've totally fallen in love with it, and I've made it like just an integral part of the workflow. So that thing is just awesome.
For those of you that don't know, I know I've explained it on here, and the show that comes out actually tomorrow in the time that we're doing this is a guy that did his record on a 388. But it's basically, it's an 8-track cassette. It weighs about 100 pounds.
Yeah.
It's pretty heavy.
It is.
It's like, if you've ever seen a cassette 4-track, it's like that, made by Tascam, but like blown up. And it has that early 80s color scheme, which is almost like a Fisher-Price.
Yeah.
Kind of like oranges and reds.
Yeah,
and,
like, you know, primary colors.
Yeah, it's very like, your heart like kind of fills when you see it. And then it has like these magical preamps. I don't know what the hell they were doing when they built those things, but those things are sweet, man. And so where the little thing pops up, is normally a cassette in a 4-track, is reel to reel, and it's quarter inch.
It is quarter inch, yeah.
So where are you getting your tape, man?
Man, I had like an initial little stock, that came with it when I bought it. And then I've picked up a few here and there, but on Reverb, I've been finding a bunch.
New?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, I've been finding some new stuff. Because they used to carry quarter-inch at Pro Tape here, and they stopped, actually. A couple years ago, I did a session for the Osmaris. I'm not sure if you're familiar with them here, like a Ethio jazz group.
Oh, cool.
And they wanted to have their own tapes. And I was like, yeah, just go to Pro Tape. And then they broke the news. They were like, man, the dude told me they stopped carrying quarter inch. I was like, oh, no.
You can find it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's, where did it's you find there. Your machine? Was it expensive, your 388?
Do you know JT from Kalu? And
yeah.
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 So it was his. And I actually didn't know him at the time. I just found it on Craigslist. And then I go out to his place and he's like, hey, man, I think we have mutual friends and whatever. And then it turns out, yeah, I'd like John's piece. And yeah, so I got it from him.
That's awesome. Good price?
Yeah, great price. Yeah. It was, I think I paid $800 for it.
Jesus.
And they, I mean, I've seen them for over $2,000 right now.
I have too.
Yeah.
When I got mine, I bought mine in like, I want to say 2000. And then I sold it in like 2003 because I started having like, I started having tracks go out. And I was like, I should sell this before I can't make my money back.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was just the dumbest thing. I don't know what the fuck I was thinking when I did that.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. So what do you use? You obviously record under Pro Tools.
But actually Logic.
Logic? Yeah. Okay, but you run tracks through there for the warmth, for the preamps?
Yeah, so...
And to hit the tape?
I do both. So I usually, like, the workflow that I try to get bands to commit to when they come in is to record, like, rhythm section, 8-track to tape.
Yeah.
And then we dump over to digital and do overdubs there that still go through the board. And I have some outboard pre's and compressors and stuff, too. So we just kind of combine the whole thing.
Yeah. And there's something about that. There's, for those of you listening that may not know, I'm sorry I keep on explaining things, but there's an inherent warmth that you can achieve in drums and bass naturally with tape.
Yeah.
That is very difficult to achieve in the digital world.
Exactly.
And it's a different kind of warmth. It's like less cold. You know what I mean? Like yes. Digital warmth is like just less cold. Like turn down the coldness of it.
Yeah.
The frigidity.
Yeah, and it kind of just kind of squeezes it all together and just makes it real comfy.
Yeah, well, that's awesome that you have that machine. I'm glad that there maybe... Maybe with more people using them and putting stuff out that comes, you know what I mean? Maybe they'll start making them again? No. I don't think so.
No, I don't know, man. I actually was talking to a band from New York, Combo Chimbita, who are super awesome, kind of psychedelic cumbia, not really cumbia. They're Colombian. But they did their last record on a 388, and the dude found it in New York for $100. It was on the floor of a shop. And the guy was like, I don't know if it works. You can have it for $100. They took it home. And it worked perfectly.
Jesus Christ. That's amazing. That's an inspiring story.
Yeah, it is.
That's the one thing is you guys are psychedelic. There is like a trippy, especially Chicha. Money Chicha to me is like a trippy kind of band.
Yeah, for sure.
You know where I saw you guys one day? There was out of the blue, there was this weird festival on the east side. Like 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, and that weird kind of bandstand.
And it was raining all day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, I saw you guys there.
Okay.
Too.
Yeah, that was super cool. I think that was like a KUTX event.
It was. It was because I saw Lori there.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember hanging out. And I just remembered. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember going off and talk. Because wasn't your set postponed because of rain or something like that?
Maybe.
Or you might have had to stop playing or something because of it. But I remember there was a pause in the action. I went and talked to Adrian for a while and then finished watching your set.
Yeah,
I was intimidated by you. Yeah, you were yeah, like, whenever I've seen you, you just look tougher than me. And it seems scary.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. Who knows? It's been great talking to you. Is there anything I'm missing, man?
No, man. I mean, it's been great talking to you, too. I think we touched on a lot of stuff. And
we did.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me out here, man.
Yeah, man. It's great. It's great to finally meet you and get to know you. I'm a huge fan of your work, and your bands are just amazing. Gang, if you are a band looking to record, you can check out Leche House Music on Facebook. Go there, find them. You can drop them a thing. But also, Beto is a guitarist, composer, and producer for bands... Grupo Fantasma, Money Chicha, Brownout, Brown Sabbath. And do you play with anyone else on guitar, just out of the blue? Like,
Not like anything really regular or anything like that. Yeah, but just here and there, little sessions maybe or something.
Do you still listen to metal?
Like, yes. Shredders?
Yeah.
Not as much as I used to, but I do. Yeah.
Who is there? Anyone new that you're like, hey, you gotta see this band?
I mean, I don't know. Not like super new. I mean, probably the newest stuff, which is already fairly aged now, is like High on Fire, bands like that.
I don't know them.
It's good stuff if you're into metal. Yeah.
Are you friends with Kyle from The Sword?
I am.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another one Alex got me. Yeah, big thanks to Alex Marrero for hooking up these great podcasts. Great to have you on, Beto.
Thanks a lot.
People can go check out Facebook, Leche House Music, and go to all the band's websites and get involved, man. Thanks for coming, dude.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Beto Martinez from Grupo Fantasma, Brownout, and the band you're hearing right there, Money Chicha, owner of Leche House Music. Producer, musician, great dude, man. You can see Grupo Fantasma on March 29th at the Mohawk. And they're putting out their new album in March of 2019. So that's coming up pretty soon. Brownout, Fear of a Brown Planet is out now. They're playing February 23rd at Luna in San Antonio. Money Chicha, Hecho en Mexico, out now. They're playing March 23rd at Continental Club in Austin. Go to all their websites to get involved with them. And if you want to check out Leche House Music, Beto's studio, go to Leche House Music on Facebook, all right? I want to thank Beto Martinez for coming by. He's a great dude. It was great getting to talk to him. I love all those bands. I love their music, and I also love their vibe. All those people are so cool. Everyone I've had on my show, seeing them, seeing sort of the joy that they spread and how they pass it down to other bands like Superfónicos and bring them into their family. Beautiful. Beautiful people. I love them all. Thank you for coming by, Beto Martinez. Hey, gang, thanks so much for listening to the show. And if you want to get involved with this show, don't forget you can find us on Spotify. You can find us on, where else? Stitcher, Overcast, TuneIn, anywhere you find podcasts. You'll find this even on Apple Podcasts, Android Podcasts, and even, is what I meant to say, iTunes. Yeah, iTunes. If you're still there and doing that thing, you can get us every Tuesday and every Friday. New show. Love talking to Beto. Thank you for coming by, brother. Here's some more music for Money Chicha. Have a great day. Let's get down.